Good Thursday morning to everybody. So John chapter 11, that's 46 verses that Brother Gideon just read. It was pretty quick, doesn't it? You read this particular narrative, it's an incredible narrative. There's so much detail given. And as we wrap up our thoughts about the sixth sign and begin our consideration of the seventh, we thought it would be a good idea just to have that good section read there. The message comes to Jesus and his disciples in verse 3. Therefore his sisters sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. Those were words that meant something to Jesus and to the disciples. This was part of his closest circle of friends. And we know that that's not just what the sisters thought, because it says in verse 5 that Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. And in verse 11, you have friendship explained again, because he calls Lazarus our friend. He was a very special person, this Lazarus. And although we're not going to focus on it very much this morning, it's interesting to note that this man Lazarus, the brother of Mary and Martha, Lazarus has the exact same name as the only named person in any of Jesus' parables. There's only one time in all of the parables that the Lord Jesus Christ told that he named someone. And it just so happens to be that the man in the parable that Jesus spoke was someone who was requested to be brought back from the dead as a sign to help people believe. Those words were spoken, what I understand, just weeks before, at the most, this event took place. I'm sure that as we've been through the workbook, or maybe when we've heard classes about Lazarus in the past, we've had to come to terms with what it says in verse 6. And he had heard, therefore, that he was sick. When Jesus heard that Lazarus was sick, he abode 2 days in the same place where he was. Now, can you imagine anything, naturally speaking, more difficult to be able to handle than that? I mean, if we heard that one of us happened to be very sick and we deliberately stay in the same place that we were for 2 days, that's just not something that we would do. But of course, we don't have the foresight that the Lord Jesus Christ has. We don't have the spirit as the Lord Jesus Christ had the spirit, because Jesus was able to say, or it's able to be said of him, just like it does in John chapter 6, that he himself knew what he would do. And he knows what he's going to do here as well in John chapter 11. And so, even though our God, his son in this narrative, is never in a hurry, he's always on time. And that's what's happening here in this particular chapter. So we find out the truth, which is that Jesus gave his friend Lazarus time to die. And then he says something very interesting in verse 15. He says to the disciples, before they together return back to go meet the family in Bethany, he says, I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, to the intent that ye may believe. Why was Jesus glad that he wasn't there? That's actually the opposite of what Mary and Martha say. Just compare that. I'm glad for your sakes I was not there. When word comes that Jesus is coming just outside the city, in verse 20 it says that Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him, but Mary sat still in the house. Then said Martha unto Jesus, she doesn't say, I'm glad you weren't here. She says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother had not died. And it's a window into a little conversation, or a number of conversations perhaps, that must have taken place between Mary and Martha in the time that they were waiting for Jesus to come back. Because that very phrase is repeated again. In verse 32 it says, then when Mary was come where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. So there must have been that kind of conversation as Lazarus got sicker and sicker and finally falls asleep. But if the Lord was here, this would not have happened. And Jesus himself says, I'm glad that I wasn't there. But what do we make of these things? Now, I don't think at all that we should attribute any kind of faithlessness or unbelief about Jesus' ability to heal in this particular place. And think about it. This is the Lord Jesus Christ. Have we read about any particular signs already this week where Jesus is able to say, you know what? He's healed. And not just he's healed, but heal him from a distance. Has that happened before? Of course it has happened before. What sign has that happened before in? Sign 2, the healing of the nobleman's son. Come down before my son dies. He lives, he says. He lived. And he heals him from a distance. So why was it that Jesus says, I'm glad that I was not there? And I think the answer has to be this. And if you have any other suggestions for this, I'd love to hear it. But here's what I think what's happening. Jesus came right away to be beside Lazarus, was experiencing the sorrow firsthand they are right with them. I think he would have felt compelled to heal him. I think it would have been too great of a temptation for him not to heal Lazarus. But he knew that the best thing, not just for this little family in Bethany, but for also a number of the people who would believe on the Lord Jesus Christ as a result of their trial, it was best to let something very difficult happen to them. And so Jesus lets it happen. But in letting that absolute tragedy take place in that family, he was still guiding everything that was happening. He hadn't left them. He hadn't forsaken them. He hadn't ceased working with them. But instead, what he's doing is he's preparing their hearts for an even greater experience of the love of God, of the truth of God, and of the glory of God that they otherwise could not have experienced had they not experienced that terrible thing. That was exactly the message which Jesus gives. Look at what he says in verse 4. When Jesus heard Lazarus was sick, he said, "This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby." And that verse was the message that was to be sent back to Mary and Martha. Think about it. So they would have heard that the sickness is not unto death, and that this is for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. Now, how do we know that that was part of the message that was sent back? We know that from what we read later on. In verse 39, Jesus said, "Take ye away the stone," at that dramatic moment of the miracle. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, "Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead 4 days." And Jesus saith unto her, "Said I not unto thee?" See what that says right there? That connects this verse with what Jesus had said before. "Didn't I say unto thee, if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God?" So it's bringing into focus the fact that this is for the glory of the Son of God, this incredible resurrection which is to take place here. Verse 41, "Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. And I knew that thou hearest me always. But because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And when he had thus spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth." The way in which he comes forth, I want you to have a look at this in your discussion groups for sure. The way in which he comes forth is emblematic how it is that we come forth as well out of our graves initially. There are two stages to our resurrection. We don't rise immortal out of the graves. It doesn't happen like that. What is it that has to happen between the time that resurrection takes place and the time that we receive immortality by God's grace? What is it that takes place in between? It's judgment, right? That's exactly right. So there are two stages here as well, because it says, after Lazarus comes forth, in verse 44 it says, "And he that was dead came forth, bound hand and foot with grave clothes." So he's got the same garments on that he had when he went into the tomb. You know what that means? He's got the same nature. It's earthbound. It's deathbound. It's human nature. It's sinful flesh. But it's not until the command, an additional command is given to us after we're brought up out of the grave, that it can be said that we actually have life. That's why it says just later on, now what happens? His face was bound about with a napkin, and Jesus said unto them, "Loose him and let him go." And that is what's going to happen when we are granted with immortality. We are going to be loosed the bondage of corruption physically, and we're going to be let go, and we're going to be given a freedom in the nature that the Lord Jesus Christ himself possesses. And we have a little hint about that when we come to John chapter 20, when the Lord Jesus Christ is raised. And we have in symbol there something that teaches us that after the Lord Jesus Christ was resurrected, there was a time which he was immortalized. And you know where his grave clothes are? Back where they belong, in the tomb. Napkin folded up by itself. The other clothes in a place by themselves. Speak about the fact that Adamic nature was something to be left behind in the resurrection to immortality. So all of these lessons are here. Teachings about the truth and the principles of resurrection and judgment are here, and I hope it gives us lots of opportunity to have some good discussion over the next couple hours.